call the House, not interim, the House Committee on Rural Communities Land Use and Water into order. This is February 1st, 2016. And our first order of business is to open an organizational meeting and then entertain a motion around the committee rules.
I wanted it closer. I like, you know, big on mics.
Okay.
And I wanted to give Representative Gomberg a chance to get here. And
gracious of you. We're doing rules.
Oh,
rules.
Sorry to be late, Mr. Chairman. I was addressing emergencies in another committee.
Oh, boy.
Chair Clem, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated 02-01-2016.
Vice Chair Post moves to adopt the proposed committee rules dated 2-1-2016. Any discussion? Seeing none, clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Gilliam.
Aye.
Representative Gomberg.
Aye.
Representative McLean.
Aye, excuse.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Vice Chair Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Post.
Aye.
Chair Clem.
Aye. Motion passes. Rules are adopted. Off to a good start. Let me open a public hearing on House Bill 4126. Ask Annette, Aaron, and Dan to come up. And Rep. Lively. Sorry, John. And or why don't we go Ann, Aaron, and Representative Lively? Okay, if we can get another chair, then we can have all four of you. I don't know if there's those plastic things you might break.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
If I may, while the panel's coming forward, I'd like to move to suspend the rules so Representative McLean can vote on the rules.
Any objections to suspension of the rules for the purpose of allowing Representative McLean to vote on the rules? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative McLean, how do you vote?
I vote yes. I apologize they summoned us to Ways and Means to get a quorum.
Those dirty rats. Representative McLean votes aye.
Thank
okay,
you.
And just so folks know, we're going to do this. If we then have a little time before 11 o'clock, which I think we will, we'll recess to give you a little more time because the Yasui family is with the governor and they're going to come down after they're doing their event upstairs. So we'll recess till 11 after we finish this. If you need to do something else, that would be a good time. So, Representative Lively, welcome.
Thank you, Chair, Vice Chairs. My name is John Lively. I'm State Representative from House District 12, which is the city of Springfield. It's nice to be here, see all of you, and I'm honored to be this early in the session to be able to present this bill. And hopefully ask for your, and will ask for your support for House Bill 4126. House Bill 4126 permits cities outside of Metro to complete evaluations and amendments of urban growth boundaries under statutes and administrative rules in effect on June 30th, 2013. In 2013, we, all of us here, passed House Bill 2254, which made significant changes to the way in which cities and counties outside of Metro must study, prioritize, and analyze land for inclusion in urban growth boundaries. In adopting new administrative rules pertaining to UGBs, the Land Conservation Development Commission has historically allowed local governments to continue in-progress UGB work under the laws that applied prior to the new legislation. When we passed House Bill 2254 in 2013, however, it did not specify its intent with respect to local governments' in-progress work. The statutory provisions made by House Bill 2254 became operative on January 1st, 2016. House Bill 4126 clarifies that cities engaged in updating their UGBs based on the laws in effect prior to July 1st, 2013, and did not complete the process by January 1st, 2016, can complete the process under the rules in effect when they begin. So it's simply a matter of clarifying what the intent was. While we all wish that the urban growth boundary processes maybe were faster than what they are, there's reasons in some cases why they take so long. And so some cities are still in position, having started that work prior to then, it still isn't completed, and this just allows them to complete the work under the rules under which were in effect when they started.
Any questions for Representative Lively? I don't know if you can stay for the whole thing, but if not, let's at least take some now, if any, for our colleague. Okay. Let's move on, and if you can stay, great. If you need to head out, we understand. So, Annette?
Good morning, Chair Clem and members of the committee. My name is Annette Spickard, and I'm the Director of Development and Public Works for the City of Springfield.
What do you think about your representative? Oh, sorry. All right. He's right there. Never mind. Just wait. Give us a minute until he leaves.
Well, I've had the opportunity to work with him in other capacities, and we've always had a good working relationship.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah.
we'll take that under consideration.
Okay. I'm here representing the City of Springfield, and we are one of the communities that is very close to the finish line in adopting our urban growth boundary expansion. And we were ready to schedule our public hearings with our City Council to finish the process. And in December, realized that while DLCD was doing the rulemaking to adopt rules under the new law that Representative Lively just described, that the ability to continue under the old process and complete our project was potentially at risk. And so we greatly appreciate the legislature adopting this bill. We hope to provide that clarification on the ability to be grandfathered in under the old laws so that we don't have to start the process over. It's been a long process, very expensive, and we have done a lot of community engagement, and we would like to very much complete our project this spring under the old rules if we can. We appreciate your consideration. I hope you pass this out with the do-pass recommendation today. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions? Great, thank you. Erin, go ahead.
Thank you, Vice Chair Helm, members of the committee. For the record, Erin Doyle here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. I will try to be even briefer because I think the previous two speakers covered this. This is the bill that we discussed during legislative interim days in January. There are a number of cities that are not a huge number, but about 10 that are going to be potentially impacted by this change. And Bend and Eugene and Springfield are the most prominent members of the group that have worked on this legislation. And then you'll see Medford also has supplied support for this bill. Particularly, they're all getting closer to the end of their UGB process, and they want to be sure that there's no question of the LCDC's authority to allow them to go under these old rules and actually finish up instead of having to go back and redo or face a challenge that LCDC exceeded its authority as a grounds of appealing a UGB decision and further delaying getting those UGBs finalized. And for those communities in particular, they have spent a number of years and a large amount of time through that public process and some federal significant funds to get this done, and we are excited to be able to fix it with this small little change that clarifies some intention. I'm happy to answer any questions and be done.
Anybody have questions? Representative Gittleman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you finish the list of 10 for us?
Representative Gilliam, the 10 that have been identified by the Department of Land Conservation and Development are Bend, Coburg, Eugene, Klamath Falls, Madras, Medford, Redmond, Seaside, Springfield, and Lakeview.
Thank you.
Any further questions for Erin?
Good morning, Vice Chair Helm, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Daniel Eisenbeis with the Department of Land Conservation and Development, here to offer testimony in support of House Bill 4126. As was mentioned earlier, this is a technical clarification to legislation that was passed unanimously by the legislature in 2013. That was House Bill 2254. That directed the Land Conservation and Development Commission to adopt rules to implement a streamlined or simplified urban growth boundary evaluation and amendment process and to make clarifications to the traditional UGB process. LCDC, in fact, adopted those rules in early December, and they became effective January 1st of this year, as was called for in the original legislation. This legislation would make clear without a doubt that cities that initiated their UGB process prior to the effective date of the new rules but did not complete the process before the rules went into effect have the option to complete their urban growth boundary amendment process under the old rules and statutes or under the new rules. The new rules in many ways make the UGB amendment process more clear and simpler for communities. However, it's often easier to complete work under the terms of when the work was started rather than changing course late in the game. So I do want to mention for the committee, Aaron alluded to it, the Land Conservation and Development Commission did include a similar grandfathering clause in the rules that were adopted. This legislation would make the statutory structure explicit on that point as well to remove any potential ambiguity and potential for litigation. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer those. Thank you.
Any questions? Representative Post.
Thank you, Vice Chair Helm. Probably for Representative Lively, and just because I have to, because if I don't, Representative Gomberg will, and I want to beat him to the punch. But seriously, it is this everything about this, as I read it going into today, is great. You know, I don't have a problem with this at all. I'm going to have a problem every single time they come before me with the dreaded emergency clause. What is, I know emergency has to be defined, but in your estimation, or I guess anybody sitting here, what is the emergency to me is a house burning down. So let's take the word emergency out. What is the emergency? What is the emergent? Why?
Vice Chair Helm, Representative Post, I'm looking down at Representative Lively, and he's nodding toward me, so I'll go ahead and attempt to answer that.
It's your emergency.
As I mentioned, the rules that were implemented took effect on January 1st of 2016.
Yeah.
So it's, I think, the intention of the proponents to address this issue as soon as possible, hence the emergency clause and having the bill become effective as soon as possible, since we're talking about clarifying the legal status of communities that have ongoing urban growth boundary amendment processes and rules that have already taken effect.
Okay, so how do you, I mean, to me, again, it's just, the use of the word emergency, but in this case, a very good case for why it needs to be done as quick as possible. So again, I don't want to do policy here on this, but I feel like maybe if there were another word for it, you know?
Would you like to chime in, Representative Gomberg?
Why not, Mr. Chair? And thank you, Representative Post. You and I have talked about emergency clauses before, and I think that they are misnamed. I think that we may call them more urgent need than emergent need. But that being the case, in the short session, I don't think we have much opportunity for amending measures when they have abstract and unnecessary emergency clauses on them. We're going to have to continue this fight over the long haul. It's in the Constitution, and if we want to change the name, if we want to change the practice, we have to take care of that here. I guess I would rephrase the question and say, what is the downside to waiting a few more months to the implementation of this good proposal?
Chair Helm, Representative Gomberg, some of these cities have been working on their process for over 10 years, or, you know, Bend has been working on this, has been remanded. It's they're reaching a point where they're almost out of land, and if they have to hold up their process in order to seek this clarity in the 2017 session, that's hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of public process to seek a small technical change to the rules that maybe they could instead finish this year instead of waiting until 2017 for the answer, which just leaves them in an even bigger bind to do things like building more housing, providing more services to the folks outside who are wanting to develop their property, which I think we've all recognized during the session. Housing, for instance, is becoming an emergency. And so if we're making cities like Springfield or Eugene, Medford, who have been working on this process, are almost done, or like Bend, who are just running out of areas to develop and therefore can't provide the necessary amenities that a city provides, then we've run into an actual, probably, emergency where people are not able to live and work in their own communities.
A good answer, Mr. Chair, which satisfies me in this particular situation.
Any other questions for our panel? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Committee, The chair's indicated that he's happy for us to move this along if we are willing. So I think with that, I'll close the public hearing and open a work session. Any further discussion on this bill? Representative McClain.
Perhaps Beth may know, has there been submitted any opposition testimony by written, any emails, anything like that in opposition?
Mr. Chair and committee members, no, there has not been. There are some materials available on OLIS that is a letter of support from Medford that we're just realizing was misfiled by committee staff for some reason, and then we're getting that fixed, and some additional testimony and support, I believe, from the city of Bend, and I can pull that up, but no written opposition.
Thank you.
Does anybody have any objection to moving this along at this time? Okay. With that, then, Mr. Vice Chair, I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move that HB 4126 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Post moves House Bill 2146 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion?
4126.
Did I say that wrong?
4126.
41. Let me do that again. It's the first day. Representative Post moves House Bill 4126 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any additional discussion? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there any way to amend this to omit Springfield? Withdraw.
Seeing no further discussion, will the clerk call the roll, please?
Representative Gilliam.
Aye.
Representative Gomber.
Aye.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Vice Chair Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Post.
Aye.
Chair Clem.
Excused. And with that vote, the motion passes.
Mr. Chair, perhaps Representative Lively would like to carry this?
Yes, would you like to carry this, please? Representative Lively. Very good, thank you. With that, our next item on the agenda is House Bill 4009, which designates March 28th as Minoru Yasui Day. And we're still waiting for the family, so we will be in recess until they arrive. I'm going to call to order the Rural Communities Land Use and Water Committee. We've been on recess. And the next item on our agenda today was public hearing for House Bill 4009, which designates March 28th of each year as Minoru Yasui Day. And I have Representative Clem, Senator Thompson, Representative Johnson here to present the bill.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Brian Clem, State Representative from District 21 here in Salem. And this is one of my two personal bills for the session, House Bill 4009. And I won't take a lot of time because I want to hear my colleagues and the family talk. I will just mention briefly the reason a guy from Hood River would have this as his personal bill. Seems a little strange. As these two know, I have tried at various times to interlope and assert that I'm from Hood River. I'm obviously not. I'm from Coos Bay. But my wife is from Hood River. She was born in Parkdale. And her father was a peer of many of the Yasui families. Homer was just reminding us that he and Mam Kiyokawa and Hideo Suzuki, my wife's dad, played baseball around the same time. And her dad also was interned in the same camps, Minidoka, Tule Lake, and all at Pinedale, at the Portland, I forget the name of the center, but where you first reported before you went to your final concentration camp, you went to Portland, to Pinedale. And so Carol's dad also was in these same camps as some of the Yasui family. So that's how I came to know about the bill, be of interest to the bill, and certainly learned some, I would say, from my father-in-law. Like most people, I think, who were in the camps, it wasn't a topic of conversation that was pleasant, so I didn't learn a lot verbally from him, but I've learned a lot about the camps from documents he kept and from my wife. And the kids often of the parent who's in the camps learn more and talk more, I notice, about the camps than the actual folks who were in the camps. Usually it would have been more like a frame of reference, like a point in time, like, oh, that you met him at camp, not I was incarcerated by my country even though I was a U.S. citizen. That kind of conversation I never heard happen. I did see the apology letter from George H.W. Bush to my father-in-law, and I know that he took his check and went and bought a new pickup truck. So that's all I'm going to share about this for now. I'm interested to hear what my colleagues and the family members have to say. I'm very proud to get to do it as my personal bill for the session. Thank you.
Chuck Thompson, State Senate District 26. I'm just proud to be here today. We have many folks from my hometown where I grew up in Hood River today. What an honor, first citizen in Oregon to receive this honor. And it's an honor for me to, and really thankful to Representative Brian Clem for sponsoring this bill. We only get two bills, and it was a really big deal that he came and did that for us. I had the honor of giving the testimony to the Senate floor today, and had many of the folks you see here, as many as I could get on the Senate floor, sitting out there. So I hope they had a great time. I'm not going to give what I did on the Senate floor today, because you're going to hear that testimony from the a lot of the kids that came up here from the Hood River Middle School, and from the also probably from maybe some great grandnieces and others. So I'm just here to ask for your support on this bill. It doesn't happen very often, and it's a great honor for all of us to be able to vote on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair and Committee, Mark Johnson, House District 52. And thank you to my colleagues also for allowing me to be up here with them. This bill is really about such a key component in the history of the Hood River Valley and the Hood River community. And I grew up in the town of Parkdale, actually a village, I think, is probably a more accurate way to describe it. And I think, Mr. Vice Chair, you have a little firsthand knowledge of that now. Is that correct? And, you know, when I grew up, most of my friends were named Donald, Doug, Brian, Sally,
Todd,
and so forth. But they had last names of Suzuki, Akiyama, Sato, Dambera, Yasui. They were Japanese-American kids, but to me, they were just American kids. We didn't have that delineation at all. It was a normal experience for me, and I was enriched by it. But my point is that time that I was going to school with these kids back in the mid to late 60s was just only about 20 years removed from when their parents were literally incarcerated illegally by their government. But you never sensed that in these kids at all. They were as American as any of us were, and they moved on, and they moved on dramatically from that. And all that to say, I think Min Yasui and his life and the testimony that he had and that you're going to hear about from these folks coming behind us, I think to a large extent is responsible for that sort of attitude. Not bitterness, not judgmental, just said we're Americans, we're going to be the best Americans we can be in spite of how we've been treated in the past. So that to me is the legacy of Min Yasui in our community, and I think you're going to be moved by what you hear by those that are here to testify. So I would strongly hope you can support this measure. I think it's, again, the only person in the history of the great state of Oregon to receive the Presidential Medal of Honor is worthy of some recognition, and it's something I think we can all coalesce behind. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Any questions for our panel from the committee before we hear the rest? Very good. Thank you very much. And our chair is going to return up here to run the meeting.
Did I lose my bell?
And we'll let him call the next panel.
So I'd like to ask David Fidanke, Homer Yasui, and George Nakata to come up and join us at the dais. Oh, and we got one more, sorry. And Joan Yasui Emerson. No problem.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. David Fidanke, former executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon. Honored to be here and very grateful that you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Gilliam are co-sponsoring this bill. This is a bipartisan effort, and we hope that all legislators will be voting in favor of it. Just a little bit of housekeeping. I know the committee heard testimony in January regarding this proposal. Kimberly McCulloch, who is at a national ACLU conference, couldn't be here today. That's why I'm pinch hitting for her. But we distributed to you all electronically and hard copies a one-page summary of the bill and a list of those organizations that have agreed to endorse the bill. To date, there are still a number of others where asks are outstanding and will probably be coming in soon. And I also distributed to you all copies of the certificate that was presented along with the medal to Minoru Yasui's family in November. If I could, Mr. Chair, just read briefly the inscription on the certificate. From the fruit farms of Oregon to the hallowed halls of the Supreme Court, Minoru Yasui devoted his life to fighting for basic human rights and the fair and equal treatment of every American. In challenging the military curfew placed on Japanese Americans during World War II, he brought critical attention to the issue and paved the way for all Americans to stand as full and equal citizens. Minoru Yasui's example endures as a reminder of the power of one voice echoing for justice. I had the honor to meet Mr. Yasui in 1983 when he received the ACLU of Oregon's highest honor, the E.B. McNaughton Award. And I remember, as if it were yesterday, the speech he gave on that occasion. It was clear that he never lost his faith in the United States Constitution or the rule of law, and the promise of equal opportunity and equal treatment under the law for all Americans. And he's certainly been an inspiration to me and to thousands of others. I want to introduce to you this very important panel and get out of their way. Immediately to my right is Minoru Yasui's youngest brother, Homer Yasui. On his right is George Nakata, who grew up in Japantown in Northwest Portland prior to World War II, which is when he first met Minoru Yasui. And with Homer, he was also interned during the war, and we'll talk about that. And finally, on the far right, your far left, Joan Yasui Emerson, one of Minoru Yasui's nieces, who will talk about her experience when she was at Girls State in 1959 here in Salem. Following this panel, you'll hear from two of the Hood River Middle School students, Emma Kelly and Michelle Kenoshita, and their teacher, Sarah Siegel. Finally, after they testify, you'll hear from Dr. Samuel Henry, who is a member of the State Board of Education and an associate professor of curriculum instruction at Portland State, and, of course, Kerry Timchuk, the executive director of the Oregon Historical Society.
Thank you, Mr. Fidanke. My name is Homer Yasui, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Min Yasui's youngest brother. I'm grateful for the opportunity to come to testify for House Bill 94009, which would try to establish a permanent bill for Minoru Yasui Day in the state of Oregon. And I want to thank Representative Glam and Representative Gilliam for sponsoring this bill. And I'd like to also thank the other legislators from Oregon who look with favor on this bill. I'm the youngest son of eighth child of nine children in the family born in Hood River. All of these three children were born and reared in Hood River, and we all went to the school, public schools in Hood River, from grade school through high school, with the exception of my youngest sister, Yuka, who was 14 years old when the bombs fell on Pearl Harbor. We had a lot of boys in our family. Min was the third son, and I was the sixth son. Min was 8 years older than me, and if he was still alive today, he'd be 100 years old this coming October. So that makes me 91. When we were growing up in the little town of Hood River, Min looked with, well, he was kind of a shepherd for us, and he took us around the city to show us the natural wonders of the world. He'd take his little boy, and I'm saying, you know, six, seven, eight-year-old boys, because there's 8 years difference between us, and he'd take us fishing for bluegills and sunfish in the round slough there, and then take us for picking wildflowers on the shoulders of Old Baldy, which is a mountain on the outskirts of Hood River. And then he'd take us to explore the banks and the waters of Indian Creek, which flowed into the Hood River. And then we'd go walking on the river trestles and the pipeline, and the senators and representatives from Hood River will know what I mean, because the pipeline no longer exists. But it was a wonderful, adventurous spot. So that's how we grew up. But then Min grew up. And then he went away to college, and when he went to college and came back, he was a more sober and a solemn and a more thoughtful person. So us little kids, you know, remember, 6, 7, and 8 years old, didn't see so much of him because he had more interests like girls and politics and money and getting a job and so on. And then the next thing we knew, he's heading off for Chicago because he got a job with the Japanese consulate there because he couldn't make a living as a lawyer in Hood River or in Portland. And then bingo, the next thing that happened is Pearl Harbor, and then our world fell apart, turned upside down, and of course the world became very difficult for everybody after that. So Min came back from Chicago. He immediately resigned his job with the Japanese consulate, came back to Oregon, and applied to the offered his services to the Army, U.S. Army, because he was a reserve second lieutenant. He did this multiple times, and he was rejected multiple times. So he set up a little office in the ground floor of the Foster Hotel in downtown Portland, which is now called Old Town Chinatown. That, in those days, it was also Japantown. And he set about trying to make a living by lawyering. He got a lot of customers, but very little money. Min knew, or he felt, that bad things were going to happen to people on the West Coast, Oregon, Washington, California, because he read the newspapers. And a newspaper said something like this: on February 9th, the FBI swooped down on an island called Terminal Island, which is near Long Beach, California, and arrested all the Issei first generation Japanese alien, enemy alien, arrested all the Japanese fishermen who held a commercial license on and who lived on Terminal Island, and took them away and put them in prison camps scattered throughout the interior of the United States. This was February 9, 1942. About 2 weeks later, the Navy, which had property in that area, ordered all persons of Japanese, rest of the Japanese that are living on Terminal Island, to get out. They gave them 48 hours notice to get out. Government did not help move. They gave them no help at all. They just told them to leave, and so the Japanese did. But unfortunately, most of them didn't know where to go, so they went to the closest place, which is Los Angeles. What they didn't know was that two months later, they were going to be forcibly shipped out again, sent to places like Manzanar and Santa Anita racetracks and so on. So then, another thing that happened is that in late March 1942, all the people of Japanese extraction were forcibly removed from Bainbridge Islands, which is in Washington. They were put on a train and sent to a remote little prison camp in the middle of the Owens Valley, which is in the Central Valley of California. This camp was called Manzanar, and at that time it was an assembly center, and thousands of people lived there. So we all knew the axe was going to fall, so Min did set up his practice. He tried to help the farmers and the businessmen, the hotel keepers, the restauranters, to lease their property or sell their property and set up wills and rental agreements and so on. So life was very difficult for him and for the rest of us. Let's see. The next thing that happened, and this was really a shocker, all of a sudden there comes a big newspaper headline that says, Jap Jap law violator arrested. And that Jap law violator happened to be my brother Min. And I said, oh, wow. Now what has he done? Said, what's going to happen to him? What's going to happen to me? And so we knew bad things were going to happen. And it was tough in those days. So at that time, when Min violated the curfew, which was on March 28, 1942, Yuka and I, my youngest sister, were the only two Yasui children at home. My mother, Yuka, and me were the only one because my other brothers and sisters lived elsewhere or they were going to college. And my father had already been arrested on August 12, 5 days after Pearl Harbor, taken away as a dangerous enemy alien. So that left the fear. So it was tough times for us too. But nevertheless, Yuka and I went to school on Monday after Pearl Harbor with a lot of fear and trepidation, but we went and we continued school till we were evacuated. But the students were not bad. They didn't pick on us and jump on us. You know, things were very, very cool, but it wasn't hostile. The hostility of the Hood River people, Sound City and County of Hood River, came after all the people of Japanese ancestry, 490 of us, from over forcibly removed from the Hood River Valley. This is in the middle of May 1942. So you probably know the rest of the story. Min violated the curfew. He was arrested. He was tried. The Supreme Court upheld his conviction. So he thought that was the end of the ride for him. But something happened because 41 years later, in 1983, he filed a petition for a writ of error coram nobis. And while he was pursuing it, Judge Robert Baloney granted his plea to reverse his conviction, which Judge Baloney did, but he refused to order a new rehearing. And that's what Min was pursuing at that time. He went all the way to the Supreme Court to get a hearing on that, but Min died while he was trying to get his coram nobis case through the court. This was in 1986 when he died. And then 2 years later, 1988, President Ronald Reagan signed a Civil Liberties Act of 1988, and that created an apology from the federal government to all people of Japanese ancestry who had been affected by the Executive Order 9066 and gave $20,000 compensation to all those people who were still alive and who were affected during that time. So then the next great thing, so Min had to wait some more. Of course, he was dead by then. But 73 years later, last year, November 24th, President Barack Obama awarded Min with the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and that was huge. It was huge. We were there. I went there, and it was one of the proudest days of my life. Now I'm testifying in front of this committee for another huge event, a huge event that's going to really, I think, in my opinion, is going to send a profound message to the general public and to the Oregonians in general that it's still possible for a person of color to be respected and honored and appreciated by the state of Oregon. Even though Oregon hadn't always treated the minority residents in Oregon all that well in the distant past. And also to say such disastrous acts as the evacuation will not flow again from orders like EO 9066. So, on behalf of the Yasui family that's scattered throughout the states in our great land, I want to say that this is a great honor, we're honored by your efforts, what you're trying to do, and our family thanks you very, very much.
George.
Morning. Chair Clem, members of the committee. My name is George Nakata, and I thank you for this opportunity to just share a few thoughts with you. In my opinion, one of the greatest civil rights leaders in all of U.S. history was an Oregonian, Minoru Min Yasui. As Homer mentioned, it was back in the year 1942, March the 28th, that Min started on a three-hour walk. That walk was against the curfew that singled out the Japanese people. He walked because our freedom was getting very fragile. He walked against the incarceration of 120,000 Japanese. He walked for equality. He walked for civil rights. And he continued that walk for the rest of his life. I happen to be one of those 120,000. No trial, no due process, incarcerated, jailed, for simply because of who we are. Our family lost everything. A small little hotel in Japantown in Northwest Portland. My father had two fruit and vegetable markets on North Columbia Boulevard, and he lost those. We got rid of everything, our household possessions. We were to evacuate with only that which we could physically carry. And that was it. Our family number was 15066. I was young then. I didn't even have a social security number, but I indeed had a family number, 15066, a number that I shall never, ever forget. We were rounded up and brought to a North Portland livestock yard. Yes, livestock yard. Pig pens, horse stalls, chicken coops, our home. Euphemism, called the Portland Assembly Center, but indeed it was the North Portland Livestock Yard. 14 by 14 for our family, only plywood walls, pigeons and sparrows flying around, all under one roof, 3,800 of us. I went into the room, found four army cots. On the army cot was a little canvas bag. We were ordered to go into the center where they used to have horse shows in this little arena. Big pile of hay. Stuff that hay into this canvas bag because that was to be your mattress. 6 months, September 1942. Down to the Union Station aboard trains. MPs, military police, marching up and down the aisles, ordering us to pull down the shades. We were not to see where we were going. We only sensed that we were going east. In the middle of the night, it stops. We deboard onto more buses, 19 and a half miles northeast of Twin Falls, a sea of sagebrush. But under the moonlight, we can see hundreds of barracks, army barracks, tar paper barracks. This was Minidoka, 9,600 of us, 44 blocks, each block with 12 barracks, a mess hall, a laundry room. I was in block number 34. But block 34, when we arrived, had no water. The plumbing was not yet hooked up. It was my job to go up to block number 36 with two pails, fill them with water, bring them back to block 34 so our family can have something to brush their teeth with and maybe drink a little fresh water. We lined up for everything. We lined up for the mess hall. We lined up to take a shower. We lined up to do our laundry. I remember lining up once a week to get our two rolls of toilet paper for our family. Minidoka, many stories there. I remember Min Yasui returning to Minidoka after 9 months of solitary confinement. He found his way out of Minidoka and onto Colorado. And you may know the story. He was a champion of people of color. To the Latin American people, to the Native Americans, he started the Urban League there. He was indeed revered there in Colorado. In 1979, we held a reunion in Portland. It was the Day of Remembrance, the first Day of Remembrance on the anniversary of Executive Order 9066. We all gathered at the North Portland Livestock Yard, and Min Yasui came in from Denver to be our keynote speaker. And I still remember his powerful and moving words. I remember in 1986, I happened to be at a conference in Broadmoor, Colorado. Min made it a point to come down there, and we had a little bite to eat together. Min was already ill. His face was drawn. But I remember him telling me, "George, when you go back to Portland, keep telling the story of the Nikkei and what we went through in the incarceration." Yes, we lost 4 years of our life behind barbed wires, the incarceration of the Japanese, and we hope that those years were not in vain. In Colorado, they have a plaza named after Minoru Yasui. They have a bronze statue for Min Yasui. But how about Oregon? He was an Oregonian. He was born here, raised here, educated here. He started his law practice here in Japantown. I remember going with my father to get advice from Min Yasui, because the Issei, the first generation, they didn't speak English, Japanese, and he translated everything for them. He spoke very good Japanese, how to get a business license, how to own a shop. So helpful to my father. And that's where I first met Min Yasui. When I met him in 1986, he said, remember the lessons that our Issei parents had fostered. Yes, indeed, his walk continued. And Oregon as a state, I think that we should not forget. We should never forget Minoru Min Yasui. Thank you.
Nicely done. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, members of the audience, my name is Joan Yasui Emerson. I am the niece of Min Yasui. My father grew up in Hood River along with Uncle Homer, who, by the way, was great, great surgeon. He's very modest, but he make you believe he's a country boy. I want to thank you for this opportunity to speak today. When Dave asked me this morning, I had no idea what I was going to say, but now I know what I'm going to say. First of all, I want to respond to the representative's comments about names of Japanese kids in Parkdale with Japanese surnames. The story to that is that when kids were born in Hood River, the doctors and the teachers could not pronounce their Japanese names, Hideo and Homaru and so forth, and therefore, I am told that every other child that was born in Hood River, Japanese-American child, was named either George or Mary. And now it's really true. Just about every Japanese person who survives in Hood River now is named George or Mary. And that's the story to that. After I finished graduate school back east, I moved to Berkeley, California, and lived my grown-up life there with my husband, my son, my granddaughter, for all these years until we came back to Hood River. And I saw what a tremendous change had been made because of brave people from the ACLU, from our Nisei ancestors, from you folks, of how much had changed in Oregon. And I want to give you two short little stories about how that was in my life, and I believe that's why Dave invited me here today. I consider myself, although I lived in Berkeley all my grown-up life, consider myself a proud Oregonian, a proud Hood Riverite, and dare I say it here, a proud duck.
Oh,
I knew that was coming. I knew that.
Going so well.
And I knew that was coming. But I wanted to tell you of an experience that of mine that is directly related to this building. There is a wonderful government study program that you probably know of called Girl State, and there's also Boy State. In 1959, I was elected one of two students, girls, from the Hood River High School to represent Hood River at Girl State. And two girls are selected, I believe, from every high school in Oregon. We stay at Willamette in the dormitories. We come here to study government. Lo and behold, I was elected governor that year, and I was inaugurated in the Senate chambers and got to sign some bills in the governor's office. It came to pass that every day, every morning, we received newspapers at our door so we could keep up the Salem paper, I believe, and maybe the Oregonian. But we received newspapers so that we could know what's going on because we were the lawmakers. And the morning after I was elected, there was no newspaper at the doors. And my friends were very curious. You know, something must have been in there that they don't want us to see, or the paper's awfully late today. So they ran to the nearest paper box. And there was my face and a description. I don't really remember the headlines. That's been 50 years ago. But it says something to the effect that a Japanese girl from Hood River elected a governor of Girl State, and then underneath it described the experience of the Japanese Americans in Oregon. And it turned out that the sponsors of that government study did not really want the girls to hear that story. And so there was quite a to-do about that, because this was interesting to me. Most of the girls did not know anything about the Japanese story. They did not know that this had happened here, and they did not know that Japanese had been taken away to the so-called relocation camps. And the fact that they didn't want us to know about it was even more mystifying and upsetting. So we had quite a discussion of that, I remember. And I come back to these chambers and to these buildings and the governor's office with a lot of memories in my head about that, of what it meant in those days and how people tried to hide that action of white people, and how now it's freely discussed, and here we are today talking about my Uncle Min and what we did and how to honor him. I think that is real progress, but I would like to share that story with you. The second is just a little story to bring home to you. You hear all about the facts of the evacuation and what happened, but I bought an anthology of stories by the elder generation and what the evacuation meant to them. And one story sticks in my mind, it never leaves my mind, actually, of how of the families got the news of the evacuation, and they had to pack up quickly and sell everything quickly, and they didn't know if they were going to take out and be shot or if they were going to be sent back to Japan or what. This one family packed up everything and packed up their old clunky car and were heading down a dusty road in Hood River, and they looked back. This makes me cry to say it. They looked back and saw the family dog following them. And he was running and running and running, and their old car was just making more dust. The dog was following. And at some point, some miles down the road, the dog just realized his family was leaving him out in the middle of the dusty road. And I think that is a feeling that the families would feel as they left their homes. It was a forever thing as far as they were concerned. And they were leaving behind Hood River, the memories and everything, including the family dog. So I thank you for this opportunity. I just wanted to remind you of your wonderful sign outside this door. It says, democracy is not a spectator sport. And I think that typifies my Uncle Min. Thank you so much.
Ooh, any questions for this group? Well, I will say to Joan, you know, I grew up in Coos Bay and down the southwest coast, and for whatever reason, I don't remember ever hearing the story.
That's right.
And if it was taught, I just wasn't paying attention that day, but I don't recall hearing it.
You know, some of the Japanese kids younger than I didn't even hear about it for a long time. Hmm. Yeah.
The way I heard about it, of course, was I married
of course.
Carol.
And you never stopped hearing about it.
And you know, she was never made governor, but she was first citizen of her county, I want to
say. Yeah, yeah, good.
And it's been a great privilege for me to be part of that family. In the time that I've been in the legislature, I've been lucky enough to have the chance to work on a few bills. One in particular, my freshman year with the now speaker, she and I were two freshmen trying to think of what are we going to do, and some young students brought us a bill to award degrees from the universities in Oregon to students and or their family members if they had passed who had been ordered out of their university time. And the guy, again, I'm a Beaver, so I'm not going to talk about U of O, but at Oregon State, we had a nice ceremony, and a number of the ISAE came. There was one gentleman from Louisiana, New Orleans, and he couldn't make it. His health was not good enough to make it, but his son came.
Oh, nice.
And he talked about his dad always being somewhat embarrassed that he had never finished college.
Uh-huh.
And by coincidence, about a month later, I had a conference in New Orleans for the state legislature. We have a group, and I was there, and I got to go to his home and meet he and his wife. And he had his master's degree from Oregon State on the wall.
Oh, nice.
And he had been a janitor at Dow Chemical the rest of his life, and all four of his kids went to Harvard, and the one son that I met was on the faculty of Harvard. And so it has been it has been an interesting 10 years for me serving in the legislature and getting to work on different bills, but I can tell you this hearing is by far the most memorable that I've been part of.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
So I'd like to call up Emma Kelly and Michelle Kinoshita and Sarah Segal.
Now we have tears in our eyes. We have to speak.
I tend to do that every now and then. Sorry.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Chair. Oh. Good morning, Chair Clem and members of the committee. My name is Michelle Kinoshita.
Good morning, Chair Clem and members of the committee. My name is Emma Kelly, and we are students at Hood River Middle School, the same school building where Minoru Yasui graduated from high school in 1933.
We are here today to encourage the Oregon legislator to name March 28th Minoru Yasui Day.
In middle schools across the state of Oregon, much learning comes through social justice units, including the Civil Rights Movement, the Mexican-American Farm Workers Movement, and Oregon's Native American Indian history. Throughout our learning, we are continually challenged to ask ourselves, what am I willing to stand up for? Additionally, for the past 2 years, we also learned about Oregon's treatment of Japanese Americans during World War II, including injustices of our own Hood River community, through studying the life of Oregon's civil and human rights hero, Minoru Yasui.
Through interviewing local historians, community people, and members of the Yasui family, we learned that Japanese originally immigrated to Oregon to help build our railroads, were loggers and orchardists in the Hood River Valley. Essentially, they came to Oregon, much like many families, in pursuit of the American dream, to build a better life for themselves and their families. Although Japanese Americans are an essential part of Oregon's history, they have experienced generations of discrimination, especially during World War II.
Minoru Yasui is a homegrown Oregon hero. On March 28, 1942, Minoru Yasui, a Japanese Nisei, a second-generation American citizen, broke Executive Order 9066, racial-based curfew against Japanese Americans, by walking the street of Portland to be arrested. He told his secretary to call the police to find and arrest him. When Mr. Yasui approached the police officer on the street, he refused to take him into custody. So Mr. Yasui walked up to Multnomah County Police Department and demanded to be detained. After his trial, he spent 9 months in solitary confinement, followed by incarceration with other Japanese Americans in the Minidoka Relocation Center in Idaho. Frustratingly, Minoru Yasui's case was unconstitutionally ruled a wartime necessity by the Supreme Court.
Minoru Yasui inspired my curiosity. Because of learning about this chapter in Oregon's history, I wanted to know more about my family. I have since discovered my second-generation Nisei grandparents were part of the Hood River Railroad Station evacuation, along with all the other Japanese Americans in our community in June of 1942. However, a dedicated U.S. citizen, my grandfather, was a military observer who fought for the United States against the Nazis in Europe, all while his own family remained incarcerated at Tule Lake. I now know more about my family, my community, and the state of Oregon's history from this important learning. Equally important, I now know about a hero who stood up against injustice. By naming March 28th Minoru Yasui Day, Oregon is honoring one of the greatest civil and human rights leaders in our country's history, while also righting a wrong.
March 28th, Minoru Yasui Day, permanently declared in the state of Oregon, will bring recognition to a man whose thoughtful, intentional, and nonviolent actions have inspired me and will continue to inspire generations to come. Throughout our learning, we are challenged to ask ourselves, what am I willing to stand up for?
Today, we stand here before you, Chair Clem and members of the committee, standing up for our belief that March 28th should be declared Minoru Yasui Day in the state of Oregon.
Good morning, Chair Clem and members of the committee. My name is Sarah Segal, and I'm a teacher at Hood River Middle School, and I'm also the current Oregon Council for the Social Studies president. I'm here to speak in support of House Bill 4009. and speak to the enriching educational impact that will result from permanently establishing Minoru Yasui, March 28th, Minoru Yasui Day in the state of Oregon. For the previous 2 years, I have developed and taught lesson plans for teaching Minoru Yasui's experience in my classroom. Students have learned about the importance of Japanese American immigrants in Oregon's history, and eventually U.S. and Oregon's betrayal of Japanese Americans during World War II. They grapple with the complexities of U.S. citizenship and came to understand rule of law, and ultimately discovered that the greatest civil rights leader, one of the greatest civil rights leaders in U.S. history, walked the same halls they walk today and attended their school. These students realize that all communities have history, some positive, some negative. Exploring these complexities in the classroom prompted the desire to know more and find a way to rectify this injustice. Numerous students, those here today with me, including these two, were inspired to further their civic engagement and brought power to voice. Utilizing their First Amendment right, they wrote and created a video for President Obama in support of honoring Minoru Yasui with the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And as you can see, their voices are still being heard. Inspired by Minoru Yasui's thoughtful and intentional lifetime dedicated to civic action, these students are here once again today, exercising their civic responsibility to advocate for justice. The ultimate goal of education today is to prepare the next generation to be engaged members of community and society at large. Using Minoru Yasui's life and legacy and Hood River Middle School students' activism as a platform, in collaboration with the Nikkei Legacy Center and the Minoru Yasui Tribute Project, we are currently developing a Minoru Yasui From Roots to Results curriculum that will be taught and shared with educators in schools throughout Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and just found out today, possibly Montana. The Oregon Legislature's declaration of March 28th permanently will help secure the sustainability that future generations will learn about, be inspired by, and celebrate one of the greatest civil rights heroes in U.S. history, Minoru Yasui. In conclusion, proclaiming March 28th Minoru Yasui Day is an incredible opportunity for the state of Oregon to establish a dynamic civil rights leader from Oregon as a statewide and national hero. Thank you.
Any questions for this group? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony. I apologize. I missed hearing what college you two are from.
Thank you.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Those were powerful, powerful statements. I'm wondering in your research if you discovered the justifications that were used to confine Mr. Yasui in solitary?
We kind of talked about it this morning. The 14th Amendment's really, really hard to explain. Do you know the history of it? He was working for the Japanese consulate in Chicago at the time, and that was kind of the justification for stripping him of his citizenship.
I see. Mr. Chairman, may I?
Yeah, Representative White, follow up.
Thank you. What conclusions have you reached individually in terms of the state's power to be able to remove our civil liberties forcefully, and what kinds of checks and balances do we need to have in place to make sure that these things never happen again in our country?
So when we were learning about Minoru Yasui, just how we said is we were learning about what were we willing to stand up for, mm-hmm. and how at the beginning of this and before learning about this in the unit, it probably would have been like a longer recess or chewing gum at school or something. But now after learning about this, my answer probably would be more something along the lines of trying to get justice, just like what Minoru Yasui did, because he was really a true hero. So I think it's kind of scary to think that there's so much power and
that he was probably, when he heard about the bombing of Pearl Harbor, not expecting to be stripped of his citizenship. And being a lawyer, he knew like the Constitution and what it said. And so his whole life, he was basically standing up for the Constitution and his rights and what he knew was true.
Thank you so much for the contributions you've made here today.
Any other questions? Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Kendra Yasui, Carrie Timchuk, and Dr. Samuel Henry. Kendra, can you please start us off?
Yes. Hi, I am the great-grandniece of Minoru Yasui. I have to admit that I don't know as much as I should about Min.
Kendra, can you tell us your name for the microphone?
Kendra Wilkins Yasui.
Perfect, thank you.
I never knew him personally. I'm only 14, and he passed away long before I was born. I do know that he fought until the day he died, and beyond, technically, for the rights of everyone here in the United States, regardless of race, religion, sexuality, disabilities, or history. He taught us that we should look beyond appearances at the person inside before we judge them, and he showed us that we all deserve a chance to live our lives to the fullest. He encouraged diversity, tolerance, and acceptance. I know that looking at my friends now, diversity is really an amazing thing. One of my best friends is gay and extremely open, while the other is a diehard Republican person. I have friends who grew up in China and friends whose families have been here for like millions of years or whatever they say. I have friends who speak English at school but go home and speak Spanish and learn in Spanish from their house. And I know that this combination of people is what makes my life so interesting and so much fun. And we're all so extremely different, and yet we're able to get along. I think Min would have been proud to see such different people working together, which is really a major part of what this country is about. So I think a day to honor Min Yasui would also be a great day to honor and recognize the beliefs that he fought for.
Thank you.
That's it. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman Clem and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Samuel D. Henry, EDD. For the last 24 years, I've been a resident of Troutdale, Oregon, by choice. I am currently employed as a faculty member at Portland State University, where I serve as an associate professor of education in the Graduate School of Education and as interim director of the newly formed School of Gender, Race, and Indigenous Nations. Although I also currently serve on the Oregon State Board of Education and work at Portland State, I am not representing their official views with this testimony. I am honored to share testimony with these esteemed colleagues that you've just heard from for the passage of H.R. 4009. The establishment of Yasui Day as a way to commemorate the community-based human and civil rights legacy of an outstanding Oregonian and an American pioneer. While this bill seeks to establish March 28th as Yasui Day in the state of Oregon, we note that his recognition has already included the award of the 2015 U.S. Presidential Medal of Freedom, and there are commemorations for him in Colorado. Our native son from Hood River is recognized. Today, we wish to provide three contexts for the bill. One, the leadership coming from one of Oregon's most vital communities, support for the ongoing struggle of equal rights and social justice in our country, and three, an increased need for urgency and accuracy in the education of our school children and for our higher education consumers. I was told when I appeared in theater in college that you should never follow kids in an act. That's still right. Vital communities in Hood River. In an academic presentation at a conference in Stockholm in 2011, I described the Hood River Commission on Children and Families on behalf of their work mobilizing leadership and community action. We had recognized the tremendous communal energy at work in reducing the school dropout rate and providing better and more comprehensive health care and increasing school attendance for Latino students. On several occasions, I've driven a few miles into the gorge to visit sites where this community work took place. Hood River's also been the place where support for the Minoru Yasui Museum has led to neighbors working with each other to build the area's social capital, a phrase and condition described as enhancing the valuable reciprocal relationships and a building of common purpose and communal achievement. The designation of the Yasui Day is a tremendous opportunity to enhance the building of positive community values, including racial harmony, and the community-supported view that all cultures and races are accepted and valued. Your action on Yasui Day will have such a positive effect in the Hood River Valley community and throughout the state. My own journey of the last 68 years has mileposts in the quest for educational equity, diversity, and social justice. This journey has led me to study culture contact and educational organizations, for which I received my doctorate at Columbia University, and then to work on school desegregation for the federal government and diversity on college campuses. I have seen much, including angry neighbors throwing bricks and bottles at black kids getting off the bus in Boston. And it's led to realizations that our society was not nearly as benevolent as some of my white colleagues believed it to be. Later, when I moved west, I heard firsthand about some of what went on in the detention camps. I worked with a woman whose older brother committed suicide in a camp in Utah, and I also met with Congressman Norman Mineta, who through his leadership came to a fuller understanding of what working for social justice is. Yet my own diversity journey is a sidebar to the story of the man we're here to remember and celebrate. In a particular dismal period of U.S. history, the people in government of the United States became suspicious of persons and their children who were foreign-born. Sounds familiar. Ordinary citizens were put on federal and local watch lists, while refugees trying to escape certain death were turned away from our shores. Our neighbors or their parents or grandparents of Japanese ancestry were arrested, detained, and their property was impounded and stolen while they were imprisoned hundreds of miles from their home. Some persisted throughout the years of detention. Others were emotionally and spiritually crushed, but not Minoru Yasui. Through their work, we begin to understand what social justice truly is. This kind of comprehension is one of the reasons we must come to know our history, and I do support those that teach it accurately. Which leads me to the urgency in education. Even as we value our land of birth and democratic society, we strive to improve. We know that until we remember and preserve our history, until we study and understand the realities of the decisions we make, and until we become educated and educate our school children and university students, the gestures of our freedom stand as empty responses. As a former member of the U.S. Armed Services, I know that putting my life in the line for the defense of the country at that time also requires us to preserve our freedom, to remember our shortcomings, and to learn from our history, especially when those records were kept silent. Last December, the Oregon State Board of Education, in conjunction with ODE, recognized the work of the Hood River Valley Middle School teacher, whom you just heard from, Sarah Siegel, naming her to be the Oregon History Teacher of the Year for her work with students, community, and family members. Give us a better lens on this kind of education. We cherish her teaching, her local studies, social studies field work, and we recognize that education is moving towards social justice and healing in our communities. Passage of HB 4007 will help us promote education, and we will hold our collective consciences in our own hands through active remembering and positive learning. Your support of HB 4009 will help provide these three contexts. We strongly urge the bill's passage, and I thank you for this opportunity to appear before you.
Carrie.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kerry Timchuk, Executive Director of the Oregon Historical Society. OHS is dedicated to making Oregon's long, rich history visible and accessible to all. For more than a century, we have served as the state's collective memory, gathering and preserving a vast collection of artifacts, photographs, films, manuscripts, books, and oral histories. Most state historical societies are, in fact, state agencies. We are not, of course. Since 1898, we have been a 501c3, but I thank the legislature for the support it has given us in the past bienniums. It has been my honor today to accompany the Yasui family members on their visit to the Capitol, and OHS is very proud to be able to have the first public display of the Presidential Medal of Freedom here in Salem at the state capitol today. He is, of course, as you have heard, the first Oregonian to receive the Presidential Medal of Freedom. We will have it at OHS beginning tomorrow through February 19th, which is the called Remembrance Day. It is would be the 74th anniversary of the day that President Roosevelt signed the order interning Japanese Americans. Through this display, Oregonians can learn more about the remarkable and courageous story of Yin Misui. Following its display at OHS, it'll be placed with the Oregon Nikkei Endowment. Lynn Longfellow joins me here today, the executive director there, and they will be the custodians of the Medal of Freedom. OHS is also proud to be the repository of many items from the Yasui family, some of which are displayed in our permanent Oregon My Oregon exhibit. Should HB 4009 become law, OHS would be very proud to help lead the annual efforts to commemorate March 28th as Minori Yasui Day. I envision that we could do this through exhibits, programs, lectures, information shared on our social media platforms, and the creation of curriculum working with Ms. Siegel that could possibly be used by all Oregon teachers. The enduring legacy and lessons from Min Yasui's life are perhaps best captured in his own eloquent words, words that Representative Johnson shared today on the House floor. If we believe in America, if we believe in equality and democracy, if we believe in law and justice, then each of us, when we see or believe errors are being made, have an obligation to make every effort to correct them. Those words in Min Yasui's life are truly worth celebrating, not just this year, but each and every year. And that completes the testimony of here today, and I would invite all members following the hearing to come outside Hearing Room C to see the display and to greet the family members. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions for this group? Okay, seeing none, thank you all. Thank you, everybody. We are going to close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 4009.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4009 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Post moves House Bill 4009 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have to thank you for bringing this bill. And if I may make a comment. Every generation will face enemies. The security of our nation and our families is paramount. But fear and suspicion that has been pointed out here today, in my view, can become greater enemies on many levels and lead us down a path of bigotry and unnecessary punishment. So let Min Yasui Day be a reminder to us never again.
Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Remarkable morning here in the committee. And I just wanted to add, I grew up in the 60s. I grew up in a time of great pride and great promise in America and great optimism. And as a young boy, I was very aware of my own heritage. I was aware of the challenges that that people of my heritage had faced here and abroad. And I remember the morning as a young student, about the same age as some of the students we heard today, that I learned of our own country's history. And I was startled to discover that we had incarcerated and interned our own people. It's a day I remember as much the way I remember the day that John Kennedy was assassinated or that the Challenger exploded in the air. It was a day of great
change for me in that broader understanding. And so I'm pleased that we have this bill before us today. I'm pleased that we have the opportunity to honor a man that had the quiet courage to stand up and say no. But I think it's more than just simply honoring this American hero. I think it's an opportunity for us to inspire future generations with the understanding that it's not just about our own circumstances, but our obligation, our responsibility to stand up for the rights and liberties of all of us. And I think that's why this is a particularly important bill. So I needed to add that to the record. I'll be pleased to support it here today and on the floor.
Any further comments? Seeing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Gilliam.
Aye.
Representative Schomburg.
Aye.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Vice Chair Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Host.
Aye.
Chair Clem.
Aye. Motion passes and the bill sent to the floor. I will carry the bill along with Representative Johnson if he so desires to be my co-carrier. And let me just comment briefly. First of all, I have to correct the record. I said Issei. My wife texted me. Issei were passed away by then. That would be Nisei that were at OSU. So from Asante to the record, it would be the Nisei who were at OSU that day. Second to George in particular, Carol's dad didn't like to talk really about his experience. Like it might be a reference to why he didn't like mutton. He didn't like lamb because that's all they had at the camp and he would not touch it. So that's like about the extent I really got from him, maybe a point in time. So hearing, because I didn't hear it from him, so hearing from someone firsthand what it would have been like that directly is very powerful and I think very important because I know many people who were interned didn't really want to talk about it, but it's important for the rest of us to hear what that would be like directly. And so thank you for doing that. And this is obviously a lesson in something that went terribly wrong in this country, but it is certainly a testament to the country that there are processes in place that help correct it. And I think if Min and Fred Korematsu and others didn't keep pushing, things wouldn't have changed as quickly. My marriage to my wife was illegal until the 50s. Not possible to have a daughter like we have, and a lot of people have benefited in ways intangibly from their work, whether he was vindicated during his life or not. Lots of us have benefited. So thank you and your family, Homer, and the rest of the Yasui family for coming down today and for sharing your brother with us. Anything else for the good of the order today? With that, we'll adjourn our committee and we'll go take a look at this medal. Thank you.